The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Welcome back to The Conservative Voice. It is 1 p.m. this lovely Friday afternoon. We are going to pick back up where we left off on night three of the RNC convention. We're going to start with a special treat from Donald Trump's granddaughter, Donald Trump Jr.'s daughter, Kai Trump. She is his eldest granddaughter. And as Donald Trump Jr. came out, he introduced her and told us all it was her first ever public speech. And when I tell you the arena was full, I am not exaggerating. What a place to launch your speaking career. She is a Trump, though, and she did a fantastic job. Here's a little bit of her speech.
Hi, everyone. My name is Kai Mazin Trump. I am the granddaughter of Donald Trump. I'm speaking today to share the side of my grandpa that people don't often see. To me, he's just a normal grandpa. He gives us candy and soda when our parents aren't looking. He always wants to know how we're doing in school. When I made the high honor roll, he printed it out to show his friends how proud he was of me. And, he calls me during the middle of the school day to ask how my golf game is going and tells me all about his. But then I have to remind him that I'm in school and I'll have to call him back later. When we play golf together, if I'm not on his team, he'll try to get inside of my head. Yeah, I know. And he's always surprised that I don't let him get to me. But I have to remind him, I'm a Trump too. Even when he's going through all these court cases, he always asks me how I'm doing. He always encourages me to push myself to be the most successful person I can be. Obviously, he sets the bar pretty high, but who knows, maybe one day I'll catch him. On Saturday, I was shocked when I heard that he has been shot, and I just wanted to know if he was okay. It was heartbreaking that someone would do that to another person. A lot of people have put my grandpa through hell, and he's still standing. You are such an inspiration, and I love you. The media makes my grandpa seem like a different person, but I know him for who he is. He's very caring and loving. He truly wants the best for this country, and he will fight every single day to make America great again. Thank you very much.
A fantastic speech from his oldest granddaughter. I thought it was adorable. I just have a short, brief clip of Donald Trump Jr. He gave a very motivating speech, and he reminded us how the opposition has been working to divide us for so many years.
We won't ever forget the lies from left-wing politicians, from their allies in the media. When you hear them in a row, you fully understand the extent they have gone to divide this great nation. They lied about Russia collusion. They lied about Hunter's laptop. They lied about Joe Biden's fitness for office. They lied about the border being secure. They lied about inflation being transitory. They lied about how they would safely withdraw from Afghanistan. They lied about Biden being a, quote, moderate. And they told one nonstop lie after another about my father. But they could only run away from reality for so long. All hell has broken loose in America, and it's impossible to hide anymore.
You know, we've all seen the way that Donald Trump and his whole family have been attacked throughout these last 8 years. And it is incredible, truly, that they continue to show up, that they continue to stay involved, even with all the lawfare and attacks that have been thrown at them. Now, the final clip from night three that I picked is obviously from J.D. Vance. Hopefully, he will be our next vice president. Most people know J.D. Vance as a senator from Ohio. He's a junior senator who's recently elected. He's been doing fantastic work. But many who are not in the political arena may not be aware, or you may not be aware, that many not in the political arena would know him from his book that became a major motion picture, Hillbilly Elegy. If that's how you know him, you understand a little bit about the struggles he faced growing up in Appalachia and how his mother struggled with addiction and their life as it was as he was coming up. The clapping that you're going to hear in the beginning of the clip I've selected for J.D. Vance is him talking about his mom and introducing her and discussing that she is nearly 10 years sober. It is the crowd giving his mother a standing ovation for being there and for her sobriety. So I hope you enjoy it. Here you go.
And you know, Mom, I was thinking, it'll be 10 years officially in January of 2025. And if President Trump's okay with it, let's have the celebration in the White House. And our movement, ladies and gentlemen, it's about grandparents all across this country who are living on Social Security and raising grandchildren they didn't expect to raise. And while we're on the topic of grandparents, let me tell you another Mamaw story. Now, my Mamaw died shortly before I left for Iraq in 2005. And when we went through her things, we found 19 loaded handguns. They were... The thing is, they were stashed all over her house, under her bed, in her closet, in the silverware drawer. And we wondered what was going on, and it occurred to us that towards the end of her life, Mamaw couldn't get around so well. And so this frail old woman made sure that no matter where she was within arm's length of whatever she needed to protect her family. That's who we fight for. That's American spirit. Now, Joe Biden has been a politician in Washington for longer than I've been alive, 39 years old. Kamala Harris is not much further behind. For half a century, he's been the champion of every major policy initiative to make America weaker and poorer. And in 4 short years, Donald Trump reversed decades of betrayals inflicted by Joe Biden and the rest of the corrupt Washington insiders. He created the greatest economy in history for workers. Really was amazing. There's this chart that shows worker wages, and they stagnated for pretty much my entire life until President Donald J. Trump came along. Workers' wages went through the roof. And just imagine what he's going to do when we give him 4 more years. Months ago, I heard some young family member observe that their parents' generation, the baby boomers, could afford to buy a home when they first entered the workforce. But I don't know, this person observed, if I'll ever be able to afford a home. The absurd cost of housing is the result of so many failures, and it reveals so much about what's broken in Washington. Now, I can tell you exactly how it happened. Wall Street barons crashed the economy and American builders went out of business. As tradesmen scrambled for jobs, houses stopped being built. The lack of good jobs, of course, led to stagnant wages. And then the Democrats flooded this country with millions of illegal aliens. So citizens had to compete with people who shouldn't even be here for precious housing. Joe Biden's inflation crisis, my friends, is really an affordability crisis. And many of the people that I grew up with can't afford to pay more for groceries, more for gas, more for rent, and that's exactly what Joe Biden's economy has given them. So prices soared, dreams were shattered, and China and the cartels sent fentanyl across the border, adding addiction to the heartache. But ladies and gentlemen, that is not the end of our story. We've heard about villains and their victims. I've talked a lot about that, but let me tell you about the future. President Trump's vision is so simple and yet so powerful. We're done, ladies and gentlemen, catering to Wall Street. We'll commit to the working man. We're done importing foreign labor. We're going to fight for American citizens and their good jobs and their good wages. We're done buying energy from countries that hate us. We're going to get it right here from American workers in Pennsylvania, in Ohio, and across the country. We're done sacrificing supply chains to unlimited global trade, and we're going to stamp more and more products with that beautiful label, Made in the USA. We're going to build factories again, put people to work making real products for American families made with the hands of American workers. Together, we will protect the wages of American workers and stop the Chinese Communist Party from building their middle class on the backs of American citizens. Together, we will make sure our allies share in the burden of securing world peace. No more free rides for nations that betray the generosity of the American taxpayer. Together, we will send our kids to war only when we must. But as President Trump showed with the elimination of ISIS and so much more, when we punch, we're going to punch hard. Together, we will put the citizens of America first, whatever the color of their skin. We will, in short, make America great again. You know, one of the things that you hear people say sometimes is that America is an idea. And to be clear, America was indeed founded on brilliant ideas like the rule of law and religious liberty, things written into the fabric of our Constitution and our nation. But America is not just an idea. It is a group of people with a shared history and a common future. It is, in short, a nation. Now, it is part of that tradition, of course, that we welcome newcomers. But when we allow newcomers into our American family, we allow them on our terms. Amen. That's the way we preserve the continuity of this project from 250 years past to hopefully 250 years in the future. And let me illustrate this with a story, if I may. I'm, of course, married to the daughter of South Asian immigrants to this country. Incredible people. People who genuinely have enriched this country in so many ways. And, of course, I'm biased because I love my wife and her family, but it's true. Now, when I proposed to my wife, we were in law school, and I said, honey, I come with $120,000 worth of law school debt and a cemetery plot on a mountainside in eastern Kentucky. And I guess standing here tonight, it's just gotten weirder and weirder, honey. But that's what she was getting. Now, that cemetery plot in eastern Kentucky is near my family's ancestral home. And like a lot of people, we came from the mountains of Appalachia into the factories of Ohio, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Now that's Kentucky coal country, one of the 10. Now, it's one of the 10 poorest counties in the entire United States of America. They're very hardworking people, and they're very good people. They're the kind of people who would give you the shirt off their back even if they can't afford enough to eat. And our media calls them privileged and looks down on them, but they love this country. Not only because it's a good idea, but because in their bones they know that this is their home, and it will be their children's home, and they would die fighting to protect it. That is the source of America's greatness. As a United States Senator, I get to represent millions of people in the great state of Ohio with similar stories, and it is the great honor of my life. Now, in that cemetery, there are people who were born around the time of the Civil War. And if, as I hope, my wife and I are eventually laid to rest there, and our kids follow us, there will be 7 generations just in that small mountain cemetery plot in eastern Kentucky. 7 generations of people who have fought for this country, who have built this country, who have made things in this country, and who would fight and die to protect this country if they were asked to. Now that's not just an idea, my friends. That's not just a set of principles. Even though the ideas and the principles are great, that is a homeland. That is our homeland. People will not fight for abstractions, but they will fight for their home. And if this movement of ours is going to succeed, and if this country is going to thrive, our leaders have to remember that America is a nation, and its citizens deserve leaders who put its interests first. Now, we won't agree on every issue, of course, not even in this room. We may disagree from time to time about how best to reinvigorate American industry and renew American family. That's fine. In fact, it's more than fine. It's good. But never forget that the reason why this United Republican Party exists, why we do this, why we care about those great ideas and that great history, is that we want this nation to thrive for centuries to come. Now, eventually in that mountain cemetery, my children will lay me to rest. And when they do, I would like them to know that thanks to the work of this Republican Party, the United States of America is as strong and as proud and as great as ever. That is who we serve, my friends. That is who we fight for. And the only thing that we need to do right now, the most important thing that we can do for those people, for that American nation that we all love, is to reelect Donald J. Trump, President of the United States. Mr. President, I will never take for granted the trust you have put in me. And what an honor it is to help achieve the extraordinary vision that you have for this country. Now, I pledge to every American, no matter your party, I will give you everything I have to serve you and to make this country a place where every dream you have for yourself, your family, and your country will be possible once again. And I promise you one more thing. To the people of Middletown, Ohio, and all the forgotten communities in Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Ohio, and every corner of our nation, I promise you this. I will be a vice president who never forgets where he came from. And every single day for the next 4 years, when I walk into that White House to help President Trump, I will be doing it for you, for your family, for your future, and for this great country. Thank you. God bless all of you, and God bless our great country.
If you weren't familiar with J.D. Vance, I think after that speech, you became a little bit more comfortable as Donald Trump's running mate for the 2024 election for the next 4 years. Unlike Joe Biden, who picked a weaker vice president candidate to protect himself, Donald Trump picked a very strong vice president candidate who, if they serve the next 4 years, will likely have a very bright future in the party moving forward. On night four, I picked Reverend Lorenzo Sewell as one of the speeches I wanted to highlight. I think it was one of the most moving speeches of the entire week. He mentions that Donald Trump was shot on Saturday at 6:11 p.m. And one of my favorite Bible verses is Ephesians 6:11, the armor of God. He called Donald Trump's survival on Saturday a miracle by a millimeter. Listen now.
Senior pastor at 180 Church, and we were blessed last month to have President Donald Trump come to Detroit, Michigan. Let's go! Can you imagine it? Can you imagine President Donald Trump coming to a city and calling a pastor like me? A pastor who was born and raised on the east side of Detroit. I was mentored by murderers. I was a student of the street. but I had a radical experience with Jesus Christ that changed my life forever. Come on, if you believe that Jesus still changed lives, come on, put your hands together and give our great God great glory. President Trump came to a church that is in a Democratic stronghold. He came to a church to listen to average, everyday Americans like you and like me. He came to a church not to speak to us, but to listen to us. He came into a church, and a lot of people, they were upset. A lot of people, they would ask me questions. Why would you allow Donald Trump to come into your church? How many know that the Bible says we are all sinners and we all need the grace of God? How many know that the Bible says he who has not sinned, let him cast the first stone? President Donald Trump, he came during his birthday weekend. Let me ask you a question. Grand old party, what would you do for your birthday if you were worth $6.7 billion? What would you do for your birthday? Would you come to Detroit? Would you come into the hood? He came to the hood because he cares about average, everyday Americans. Party, I need to ask you a question. What would you ask for your birthday? If you could go to Mar-a-Lago or if you could go to New York, what would you ask for your birthday? He asked for prayer. I believe that prayer is preventative and prayer is proactive. I believe that praying in the name of Jesus changes everything. And when we prayed for President Trump, only God knew that 30 days later, there would be a miracle by a millimeter. Only God knew that if we prayed for him during his birthday, there would be a miracle by a millimeter. If President Trump had moved 1 millimeter, he wouldn't have been here on Monday to talk to us about how America was going to be made wealthy again. If President Donald Trump would have moved just a millimeter, he wouldn't have been here on Tuesday to talk about how he was going to make America secure again. If President Donald Trump would have moved just a millimeter, he wouldn't have been here on Wednesday to tell us how he was going to make America strong again. And if President Trump would have moved just a millimeter, we would not be hearing tonight how he was going to make America great again. Before I take my seat, I just gotta talk to you about something called providence and something called sovereignty. God's sovereignty is his ability to be able to do what he wants when he wants because he's God. And God's providence, it's when he does what he wants, when he wants for all of you. Did you know that President Trump was shot on 6/11? And do you know that Ephesians chapter number 6, verse number 11, says, be strong in the Lord and in his mighty power. So all my Democrat friends, I want to ask you one question. Do you know anybody that was the 45th president? He was convicted of 34 accounts. He raised $53 million in 24 hours and could be the 47th president of the United States in America. And he was shot one time. Do you know anybody like that? To all my friends back in Detroit who are Democrats, I want to ask you just one simple question. You can't deny the power of God on this man's life. You can't deny that God protected him. You cannot deny that it was a millimeter miracle that was able to save this man's life. Could it be that Jesus Christ preserved him for such a time as this? Could it be? For him when he came to the round table in Detroit, that Jesus asked and he received, that we sought him and then he found protection. Could it be that the King of Glory, the Lord God strong and mighty, the God who is mighty in battle, protected Donald Trump because he wants to use him for such a time as this? If you believe that, come on, put your hands together.
And he mentions Esther, for such a time as this, providence. For those of us in this arena right now, providence is huge. Moving on to another awesome speech last night, the irony of Fox News having to cover Tucker Carlson giving his night four primetime speech at the RNC convention was not lost on me. I enjoyed it a great deal. I'm sure he did too. I hope you enjoy what he had to say.
I have been to many conventions. I have never been to a more fun convention or a convention with better vibes. They literally let Navarro out of prison. First of all, thank you. This feels a lot different from what I thought it was going to feel like. I can't hear you, but I know it's something good. So... I watched the video of what happened in Butler, Pennsylvania about 50 times. I think I was one of about 8 billion people around the world who watched it. And the more I watched it, the more it struck me that everything was different after that moment. Everything. This convention is different. The nation is different. The world is different. Donald Trump is different. When he stood up after being shot in the face, bloodied, and put his hand up, I thought at that moment, that was a transformation. This was no longer a man. Well, I think that. I think it was divine intervention. But the effect that it had on Donald Trump, he was no longer just a political party's nominee or a former president or a future president. This was the leader of a nation. And I think there's a difference. I've spent most of my life in Washington where the president is at the top of the pyramid, everyone wants to be the president. But if you think about it, the presidency comes with great power, obviously. But if you think about it, that is a title that is bestowed by a process of some sort that can be subverted. And in the end, it does not confer by itself, as no title does, legitimacy. Just because you call yourself the president doesn't mean that much inherently. I can call my dog the CEO of Hewlett-Packard, it doesn't mean she is. No, it's true. And you hate to say it, but it is also true, is a fact, that you could take, I don't know, a mannequin, a dead person, and make him president. If you... No, you could. You could. I'm just saying, theoretically possible. With enough... with enough cheating, that could happen. But being a leader is very different. It's not a title. It's organic. You can't name someone a leader. A leader is the bravest man. That's who the leader is. That is true in all human organizations. This is a law of nature. And in that moment, Donald Trump, months before the presidential election, became the leader of this nation. That was the most obvious to me. And I have to say, you know, I think it changed him. He reached out to Trump within hours of it that night. And what he said to me that night, having just been shot in the face, he said not a single word about himself. He said only how amazed he was and how proud he was of the crowd, which didn't run. And I thought two things. The first thing I thought was, well, of course they didn't run. His courage gave them heart. A leader's courage gives courage to his people. And the second thing I thought was, this is the selfish guy I've been hearing about for 9 years. Really? Not a word about himself? About his people. Period. And the second thing I noticed, which I don't think anyone has remarked upon in public, but I'm just going to since I don't have a script, like, why not? Is that he turned down the most obvious opportunity in politics to inflame the nation after being shot. To inflame the nation. Which is an opportunity that almost every other politician I've ever met, and certainly his opponents, would have taken instantly. And they would have said, well, what is this? How did he get shot? Like, how did this happen? And those are real questions that we have to get to the bottom of. But in the moments, the days, the week after the shooting, he did not say that. He did his best to bring the country together. And I thought, this is the divisive figure? This is the irresponsible person? No. This is the most responsible, unifying behavior of a leader I think I've ever seen. So the question is, where is he leading us? And I could go on for hours, but let me just sum it up. I do think the entire point from the famous escalator ride 9 years ago until today of Donald Trump's public life has been to remind us of one fact, which is a leader's duty is to his people, to his country, and to no other. That's the point. That's the only point. And another word for this is democracy. Democracy, in case you're a little sick of being beaten in the face with democracy on television, actual democracy is the proposition that the citizens of a country own that country. They're not renters, they're not serfs, they're not slaves, they are the owners of the country. And for that to be true, their leaders have to represent them, which is another way of saying they have to do what the people want them to do, or a close approximation thereof. But if they completely ignore what people want, not just 1 year, but generationally, say for 50 years, then it may be, I don't know what, it's not a democracy. And so I think the entire Trump project, paradoxically, is attacked as an enemy of democracy, is to return democracy to the United States. Hey, let's pay attention to what people actually want. And the lack of interest in that question in Washington is something that ultimately drove me out of the city after 35 years. Lawmakers stepping over the prostrate bodies of their fellow citizens ODing on drugs to go cast votes to send money to some foreign country. Yeah, actually, we've lost more Americans from drugs in the past 4 years than we lost in World War II. Yeah. Our bloodiest war. More than we lost in World War II. Does anybody care? It is pathetic. It is pathetic. And do you hear a single word from Washington about doing anything about it? We know where the drugs are coming from. We know the supply routes. The U.S. military spent billions bombing the Ho Chi Minh Trail. You don't see our commander-in-chief suggesting that we use our military to protect our country or the lives of its citizens. No. That's for Ukraine. And it's too much, actually. It's too insulting. It's too insulting. It's a middle finger in the face of every American. It's a very clear statement, which is unmistakable. And that is, we don't care about you. And Donald Trump, whatever you say about him, and I think he's a wonderful person. I know him well. By the way, the funniest person I've ever met in my life, actually. You can't be funny without perspective or without empathy, which is true. But everything else about Trump aside, he actually cares because he's interested in the people who live here because that's his job. A father's job, his duty is to his family. An officer's duty is to his men. A president's duty is to his citizens. And he seems to be the only one who thinks that. And in his choice for vice president, J.D. Vance, he's made that really clear. J.D. Vance, I'll say this about him, is a thoroughly decent man, and I'll just admit it, a friend of mine, one of the very few politicians in Washington who actually is very close to his own wife, which is wonderful to see. And she's wonderful, actually. But J.D. Vance has views that are closer to Trump's voters than anyone else in Washington in office. Therefore, he is the vice president. That's called democracy. So I will stop on just one point, and that is what's happened over the past month since the debate, and particularly on Saturday in Butler. I think a lot of people are wondering, what is this? This doesn't look like politics. Something bigger is going on here. I think even people who don't believe in God are beginning to think, well, maybe there's something to this, actually. And I'm starting to think, it's going to be okay, actually. I do think that. In the day after the midterm elections in 2018, Antifa came to my house. The Democratic Party's militia, okay? I was at work. It was obvious when I was at work because it was public. My wife was home alone. They tried to come in through the front door. They terrorized her. She hid in our pantry. It was on television. It was horrible, actually. I'm not whining about it. I wasn't getting shot in the face, but it wrecked our day. And the next morning, we're lying in bed, and the phone rings for my wife, and it's Donald Trump, who's not like a regular text buddy of Donald Trump's. She picks it up, hello? Susie, it's Donald Trump! And it's coming through, I can hear it. You know, I'm lying in bed, whoa! And the first thing he says is, I'm going to stand guard outside your house. And she goes, oh, that's so nice. And he says, I'll never forget this as long as I live. He says, you know, there's a lot of hate out there. And she said, you know, there is, Mr. President. And then he says, but there's a lot of love. There's a lot of love. And we are seeing that love. I don't think it's human love. And I'll just stop with this. I'm not always convinced that I'm on the right side. I've been on the wrong side many times. You'll never hear me say I'm on God's side or God's with me or even I'm with God. I want to be. Not sure I am. But I will say this unequivocally and conclusively. God is among us right now.
What a fantastic speech from Tucker. We're going to shift gears a little bit and jump into Annette Albright, who worked in the criminal justice field and decided that she wanted to get involved in earlier education criminal intervention to try and stop the pipeline from the city schools to the city prisons. Let's hear from her.
Good evening. My name is Annette Albright. I grew up in the small town of Mount Airy, North Carolina. North Carolina! Like my parents and my grandparents, I was a lifelong member of the Democrat Party. Don't worry, the story gets better from here. After completing a degree in criminal justice, I started a career working with the North Carolina Department of Corrections. I left my job in the criminal justice system to work for Charlotte-Mecklenburg School District to engage our youth before they got stuck in the system. It didn't take long for me to realize that public schools are a part of the problem. Sadly, too many of our schools are more like prisons than places of learning. That must change. In one public high school, I witnessed a full-blown riot. I saw many violent altercations between students and physical attacks on staff. During my 14 years working with the Department of Public Safety, offenders never laid a hand on me. Yet, I was violently assaulted by a group of students in a public high school. The uptick in school violence was related to an Obama-Biden policy that directed schools to reduce suspension rates and keep dangerous students in the classroom. President Trump reversed the Obama policy and put the safety of our kids first. Violence on public school campuses should not be a Democrat issue. It should not be a Republican issue. It is an American people issue. Sadly, I've repeatedly seen that the Democrat Party cares more about appeasing the teachers' union than they do about prioritizing the needs of our kids. They champion safe spaces instead of safe schools. This is completely wrong. Little by little, I began to see the truth. While Democrats spend more money on a broken system, Republicans are empowering parents and fighting for school choice. While Democrats think school resource officers are a threat to our students, Republicans know that they protect our kids. While Democrats won't admit that our schools are failing, Republicans will fix the system and make our schools safe. That's why this year, for the first time in my life, I am registering as a Republican. Thank you. Thank you. And in November, I will proudly cast my vote for Donald J. Trump. Only together we can make America's schools great again.
Obviously, she's talking about a lot of the issues that many of us who got involved in 2020 and 2021 due to the school closings are seeing. We're going to move on quickly to get to Dana White, president of the UFC, who left vacation to introduce his good friend Donald J. Trump.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Dana White. I am the CEO and president of the Ultimate Fighting Championship. So 2 weeks ago, I got a call from President Trump asking me if I'd be willing to speak tonight. As usual, there was no pressure, no demands. He asked me as a friend, and of course, I said yes. Then, after I accepted his offer, he sent me a text message, and I just want to read to you a little piece of what President Trump wrote to me. Dana, I'm so honored that you will be doing the introduction at the National Republican Convention. Think of it as the biggest fight you ever had, a fight for our country and even the world. I only wish you didn't have to interrupt your family trip, but I hope they understand They love you, and they know how important this is. Now think about this. This man's running for president of the United States. He's fighting for the future of this country, and he's concerned about interrupting my family trip. That's the President Trump that I know. A man who truly cares about people. The mainstream media likes to push the narrative that he doesn't care about anyone but himself. I absolutely know that's not the truth because I've been friends with this guy for 25 years. And for the people who know me, they'll know this is true. I just want to make something very clear. Nobody in the Trump campaign has ever told me what to say. Nobody tells me what to say, and I'm nobody's puppet. I'm not telling you what to think. I'm telling you what I know, and I know President Trump. I know President Trump is a fighter. I've been saying this since 2015. Now look at what's happened over the last 10 years. We have all seen it with our own eyes. I'm in the tough guy business, and this man is the toughest, most resilient human being that I have ever met in my life. Harder he fights, and this guy never, ever gives up. So what's at stake here? The answer is in President Trump's text, and I quote, "A fight for our country." I know why he's running for president again. Why else would he put himself through everything he's dealt with just to get back here? We all know he doesn't need this. This guy's got a great life, he has a beautiful family, and he has achieved everything that you could possibly achieve in life. I know President Trump is literally putting his life on the line for something bigger than himself. And he's willing to risk it all because he loves this country. And I know he wants what's best for the American people, all American people. I know he's running for president to save our American dream. I'm living the American dream, and I know the American dream is very real. Whether you were born in this country or came here from someplace else, this is the last real land of opportunity. Protect the people, not run their lives. And if you're buried in government red tape, how will you ever start your own business? If you're struggling to pay your bills, how can you ever afford to start a family? And if you don't feel safe in your own town, why would you ever buy a house? I know that President Trump is fighting to save the American dream, and that's what's at stake in this election. To lead us in this fight. I know President Trump is a proven leader, a fearless leader, and this country was in a much better place when he was in the Oval Office. In my mind, the choice is clear. But this election, we all get to choose. I know I'm going to choose strength and security. I know I'm going to choose opportunity and prosperity. I know I'm going to choose real American leadership and a real American badass. And I'm not telling you what choice to make, and I'm not telling you what to think. I'm telling you what I know. I know America needs a strong leader, and the world needs a strong America. I know Donald J. Trump is the best choice for President of the United States. My fellow Americans, it is my honor to introduce the 45th and soon to be 47th President of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
I am running to be president for all of America, not half of America, because there is no victory in winning for half of America. So tonight, with faith and devotion, I proudly accept your nomination for President of the United States. Thank you. I am running to
There you go. Donald Trump accepted the nomination. I'm pretty sure he had the most delegates in history this week to clinch the nomination. As we enter into next week, I believe there is going to be a voice vote to make Biden their official nominee. There's back and forth as to whether or not he will drop out this weekend or he will stay in the race. Things are insane. So stick with us every Friday from 12 to 2 as we walk you through the political environment that we are witnessing firsthand in 2024. Thank you for joining me today on The Conservative Voice. You can find me on Twitter at Ada Nestor WC and Keystone Town Hall at Keystone TH. Next week, we will have witnesses and special guests on air to share their experience from the rally last Saturday, and we will certainly discuss the catastrophic security failures on the ground that allowed for such a shocking and terrifying attack on our republic. I hope you have a fantastic weekend and a great next week. We will see you on Friday at 12 on WWDB, The Conservative Voice.